Okay, remember that this maid servant, this female servant, was used by Joab to try and get David, I guess, to somehow teach him a lesson, I guess, to get him to allow Absalom to come back to Jerusalem. Well, David asked her, after she had told this story and so forth, did Joab put you up to this? And, of course, she said, yeah, he sure did. Joab was the one that told me to tell this story. He's the one that put the words into my mouth. And so Joab, of course, has been an ongoing character in a lot of these stories and will continue to be for some time because he's like the commander of the army for David. So the point is that Joab, through her, is wanting Absalom to come back to Jerusalem. So, in verse 21, the king says to Joab, all right, I've granted this thing. Go, therefore, bring back the young man Absalom. So Joab sent to go get him. And Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, my lord, O king, and that the king has fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house, but did not see the king's face. What kind of response is this from David? Why is David allowing him to come back, but not allowing him to see the king, having to stay in his own house? I mean, how would you describe that as a response? I think that has a lot to do with maybe the chapter as far as what we're supposed to learn from it. Okay, yeah, that's... If David were a prophet, he could see the future, but he can't. All right. What else about this decision? What's it showing, I guess, about David's feelings about Absalom and what Absalom's done? Maybe about David's own life? What is it revealing about David's character?
Okay. That he's just not sure where he should really, but in the eyes of the people and everything, that he thinks that's what he should do. But if he brings him back, that doesn't mean that he has to.
Yeah. He's kind of, it's not a full restoration by any means. It's just kind of he's just kind of wavering, kind of on the fence sort of thing. Well, he lets him come back, sort of.
Yes.
Yeah, he's right. He's not confronting the real issue. Yeah, I think that's something we learn here. He's not confronting what he really needs to confront. Yeah, he's letting Absalom come back partially. So he's kind of make a wavering, kind of an indecisive decision. And when it came to his kids, that tended to be his area where he had the most difficult time confronting things, and those of you that have kids know how that can be. All right, that's the way it is, and David is a typical father in that sense. The thing that David doesn't really do that he needs to is he's not just a father; he's the leader of the entire nation, and so he has added responsibility. Not that there's not enough being a father, but you throw being, you know, the ruler on top of everything else. And I think we start to see, and some of the people start to see, his indecisiveness, his inability, at least in some situations, to make good, concrete decisions. And this is certainly one of them. So Absalom comes back, And he's basically kind of confined to his house, you might say, in a sense. But he cannot see David. And I think that will lead to, we were talking about prophecy in the future, and that's going to lead to difficulties. All kinds of difficulties are going to come out because of the decision on David's part to partially restore Absalom. Because sometimes a partial decision is worse than saying yes or no. And it certainly is going to be in this situation. So what happens then? Now in all Israel, now we start to learn more about Absalom. Now in all Israel there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. We know someone else in the past, right? That had good looks, was a head taller than everybody, the first king of Israel, Saul. So in all of Israel, from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. So he was obviously some sort of, he was quite a commanding figure as far as that goes, as far as his physical appearance, as far as his looks and so forth. Very handsome, probably very athletic looking and all of this. No blemish, it says, in any way. We're going to see that this helps him become a leader because some people, and people are just the same way today, are more concerned about outward appearance. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, you get two people up running for an office, and a lot of people will care less about what their views are on issues or about their integrity, but what do they look like? You know, and I've heard it said, and you probably have too, that FDR would have never been elected president if TV was back then, because nobody would elect someone that looked like him. He didn't have that commanding figure and all that. Yes. Yeah, TV was coming then too. Yeah. Yeah. Difference in years there, very much. And of course nowadays, you know, everything is filmed. You know. You cannot get away from being filmed. So, back then, Absalom was the kind of person outwardly that many, many people wanted. And as is quite often the case, that's a poor determination of a person's character. And it says, when he cut the hair of his head, at the end of every year he cut it because it was heavy on him. When he cut it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels, according to the king's standard. This is somewhere around 5 pounds. That's a lot of hair. I don't know how much my weight. I get mine cut about every month, but I don't know how much it weighs.
Did that count the grease he had in it?
I could have. I don't know. But that's a lot of hair. And you start to see something else about Absalom, pretty proud of himself. All right? Pretty proud of the fact that he is very outwardly appealing, very a physical specimen, you know, that people, again, would like to see. So that is coming out about him. And this long hair gets him in trouble, too, later on as well, in a major way. But to Absalom were born 3 sons and 1 daughter whose name was Tamar. And she was a woman of beautiful appearance. Just like the Tamar that she was named for, who was beautiful, so was this Tamar. So both of them were. Names them after, he names her after his sister. So that gives us some background about Absalom and what he looked like and all of these other things, some of his attributes and so forth. So, Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem but did not see the king's face. 2 full years. Now, if you count the time that Absalom was gone, I think there's like a 5-year period or something around there that he didn't see, that they didn't see each other. Almost 5 years. So, you know, we still see David's indecisiveness in dealing with Absalom. You know, he's there for 2 years. And he still would not or could not make any decision about what to do with them for 2 full years. And that just makes things worse. You know, the fact that he would not make a decision, he would not confront Absalom, just makes things much, much worse. So, it says that Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come. So he said to his servants, "See, Joab's field is near mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire." And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom's house and said to him, "Why have your servants set my field on fire?" Now that's a way to get somebody's attention. Especially in an agricultural society, when so many people depended on that, they had adjoining property.
I wonder if Joab had that in mind to kill Absalom.
I don't know. But that was, again, that's insight into Absalom's character. And that, I think, is why we have these verses here to reveal to us a lot about Absalom and what kind of person he was. So since Joab wouldn't come the first 2 times, then he said, "I'll make sure you come this time." And it certainly got his attention because he comes, you know, and says, "Why have your servants set my field on fire?" See, he knew it was Joab. He wasn't concealing the fact that it was Joab. So Absalom answered Joab. Says, "I sent to you saying, 'Come here so that I may send you to the king to say, why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to be there still. Now therefore let me see the king's face. But if there is iniquity in me, let him execute me.'" What is there about that last part of the statement that's significant? That's right. Yeah. It's like sometimes when people say, "Well, if I've done anything wrong, I'm sorry." Well, that doesn't mean anything. You know, that's completely insignificant. All right? So that's what's happening here. If there's any iniquity in me, then let the king do something about it. See, he wasn't even admitting that he had done the slightest thing wrong. So, yes. Exactly, yeah. Because he's been there 2 years and David's done absolutely nothing. You know, no conversations, nothing. So no confronting, no talking, no discussing, no anything. So Absalom is like kind of calling David's bluff in some sense. So what happened? So Joab went to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom. I remember reading this past week about the comparison between these two coming together as opposed to Joseph back at the end of the book of Genesis and his brothers. And remember, their coming together was a really beautiful, loving type of reconciliation. Not so much here. You can tell from the reading that David and Absalom, their heart's not in it very much. Yeah, they've come back and they've kind of made some sort of reconciliation, but it's not much. It's not a real heartfelt, sincere, total reconciliation. And that has a lot to do with how they feel about each other. And sometimes, you know, human nature is human nature. People do the same thing today. You know, there's reconciliation and there's reconciliation. Sometimes it's just, you know, a partial, at the most, reconciliation. So David probably made some mistakes. Absalom probably definitely made some mistakes. And that leads to tremendous troubles in the next chapter. Tremendous troubles. And we've got just a little bit of time to start.
This whole thing seemed like it's just kind of carrying Flynn politics to the extreme. Yeah.
Oh, they. Oh, definitely. Definitely, that has so much to do with it. Yep. Yeah. I mean, when we think about how long ago this was, and people are exactly the same today. People's nature hasn't changed. Now, how they do certain things or, you know, bring it out might be a little different, but as far as the principle, it's exactly the same. People played politics back then, just like they do now, hasn't changed one little bit. And I assume that'll be the way it is until it's all over. So that does lead, as we've mentioned, to major problems, which we see starting in chapter 15 when it says, After this it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Did it take 50 men to run the chariot? What do you think he's doing here? Show. That's right. Parade. Yeah, that's kind of what it is. Look at me. Okay, I want everybody to notice. Okay, I've got 50 men running here with the chariots and horses and everything. So, you know, don't miss me. I want everybody to see me. So this is the start of his campaign trail, I guess you would call it. That's kind of what it ends up being. Now, Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. So it was whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision that Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there's no deputy of the king to hear you." Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice." And so it was whenever anyone came near to bow down to him that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. In this manner Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel.
Doesn't that sound like a politician?
Wow. I mean, this guy is 100% total politician.
Usurper.
Man. I mean, it is just, I don't know what you want to call it, just phenomenal about his ability to manipulate people. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's manipulating people. So they're coming in. You know, David, being the king, was like the Supreme Court, sort of, in that day. If there was no justice done before then you could appeal to the king and he would be the final say. So there would be people coming in, obviously, from all the 12 tribes at different times to come to the king. So he would go out before they got there and meet them and say, "David doesn't have time for you. You won't get any justice if you go there. Forget it. He's not doing any, you know, he doesn't have time for that stuff. So, but if I were king, the economy would improve. All these other things, you know." So it's exactly, you know, the same. I mean, people have not changed one little bit, and like I've said before, I'm sure they won't change. I'm sure people will be acting just the same, have the same nature, be doing the same type of things as before. Well, our time is running out, so we will, next Wednesday will be the final night of our gospel meeting, so Lord willing, 2 weeks from tonight, we'll get back into the campaign trail and see what happens.